Welcome to the Motoring Podcast, your weekly discussion of motoring news. This is episode 17 on Tuesday, the 5th of January, 2016. Hello, I'm Alan.
Hello, I'm Andrew.
Happy New Year, mate.
Happy New Year to you. Happy New Year to all our very fine listeners.
Quite. All three of them. Yes. Happy New Year, everyone.
How is your festive period?
My festive period was... It was good. It was excellent. There was a fair bit of driving involved. Little Yaris down. Did the 1,500 miles, I think I did, over the fortnight in my 1,200 pound car, with the only problem being a stuck boot latch. But that was kind of my own fault for getting a boot lease stuck in.
It's not kind of. It is purely your own fault.
Nothing is ever my fault. But yeah, that was. Can hardly really blame the car for my stupidity in the dark and the rain. So yeah, it was pretty awesome there. It was good. What else to do? I read Richard Porter's book. You might not have noticed him mentioning it. That's Richard Porter, who does Sniff Petrol and Gareth Jones on Speed. He's mentioned his book only slightly less than I've mentioned Mazda MX-5s at the end of last year.
But at least he was selling something.
At least he was. There's a reason Mazda follows me on Twitter. Really, really, really good, by the way. I thoroughly recommend. I know that you haven't read it and it hasn't come up, and that you've got it in your wish list, Andrew. So I'm not gonna go into too much.
No plot spoilers, please.
No plot spoilers, but it's really, really worth reading. And what comes through is that the level of regard that he has for everyone that was on the Top Gear team and stuff. As I said earlier, when Andrew and I were discussing it, it was the only problem with it I found was that I wish it had a happier ending. And that's really that bit. Yeah. What else? I was in a new Renault. We will get to the news eventually, by the way, folks. But I was in a new Renault Espace, which we're never, ever going to get in the UK. And that seems to be a real shame. It was a very, very nice vehicle.
Why aren't we getting that over here? Is it because we aren't, as a country, buying large MPVs now?
I think so. That was basically what I came to, and the fact that Renault UK are really trying to push some of the electric stuff a bit more. I think it just wasn't selling as much. The new one is different from any of the four previous generations of Espace, in that it's less of a shed on wheels. And it is more of a Mercedes R-Class. So it sits quite high, but the cabin is quite low. So you get those kind of two, and it's not quite as big as an R-Class. So it's like 2.5 rows of quite reclined seats. Mm. But as a taxi, it was a taxi I was in. I was in it a couple of times. Just absolutely loads of space in certainly in the front and in the middle. Really nicely finished in the left-hand drive one. The driver took me through all the various bits and pieces and complexities of the touchscreen controls, which worked absolutely everything from the sat nav to the massaging seat, which was a bit weird. It was like, I've never tried. Have you ever tried one of those massaging seats?
No.
Cars, no. It's a bit like sitting on a seat with ferrets running around underneath the cover.
Doesn't sound pleasant.
I didn't actually find it very pleasant. I found it a bit weird, but maybe you get used to it. But I actually really liked it. It was really nice. It was quiet. It was comfortable. It was super smooth on bumpy French roads. It was everything you'd want from a French car, really. Works perfectly in France. Maybe just doesn't work for the UK market, which is a real, real shame, I think.
I suppose people are buying large SUVs now, aren't they?
Yeah, well, that's it.
Rather than MPVs. Because what's the biggest ones that I see commonly around here are the Zafira size, aren't they? Than the, I don't see new Galaxy. Is there any, do Ford there do is. The Galaxy still?
They do. You see, this is what you're saying about never being in London. You'd know there was a Ford Galaxy still for sale if you're in London, because the egregious Addison Lee use them nonstop. They sort of they have fleets of them as basically semi posh minicabs in London.
Right.
So
I have no desire to go to London, really.
Neither do I, but it just kind of happens, sadly, as you said.
I at least have an option.
I have a desire to get to receive my salary each month, so I kind of have to go to an extent to where where customers are, and that happens to be London, sadly. How's about you?
I had family and brisk seasonal walking, as everyone does in this country, and near-death man flu, which is why I sound so crummy at the moment, and I apologise to everyone, but I'm here, and I wanted to talk about cars, so I'm here. But other than that, no, it was nice. It was a nice break.
Awesome. Yeah, same here. Shall we move on before you croak your last?
Yes, quite.
Your voice finally gives up. I'm going to let you start.
Okay. Well, let's start the year, as hopefully we don't go on. But yesterday I was worried, and I expressed this to Alan, that what are we going to talk about? There's been no news. It's been Christmas. Nothing's happened. And the good old US of A came to our rescue.
It took less than 10 minutes before this appeared in my... between us chatting on Slack and you... and then... up this popped in the Twitter.
Another example of how powerful this podcast is, that we say we're worried that there isn't something to talk about, and no less than the US government goes, don't worry, guys, we've got your back. We'll sue Volkswagen. So now Volkswagen are beginning their legal action against the Department of Justice. Where it is alleged nearly 600,000.
So, was it not the other way around? Is it not?
Well, they're defending them. Justice. They'll be defending themselves.
Pardon me. I was half listening. Yes.
That nearly 600,000 Volkswagen Group cars have been fitted with the illegal defeat devices. Now, there is a maximum fine of 25.5. Well, if we talk in English. £25,500, which would make a fine, if it went to the maximum, of 61 billion quid. There's countries that don't have a GDP of that.
Yeah.
So I would imagine it's not going to be that high, but I would imagine there's going to be a big bill. What I meant to do, but I didn't, is I meant to check what Volkswagen's share price did on the news of this.
Oh, yes.
Because I would bet that took a smidgen of a nosedive.
Mm-hmm. Analysts, whoever they are, well, to be honest, it might not have taken a smidgen of a nosedive, because it may well have been expected. But it's predicted that the fines could reach at least £20 billion. And note that these are pounds that we're talking in. Yeah, I mean, I don't think that this was a surprise. I don't think this can have been a surprise. I think that it was known that this was going to happen at some point. It's also worth mentioning that these numbers we're talking about, and of course this is a US suit, so this is only about the nitrogen. This is only about the nitrogen emissions, rather than being about the CO2 emissions, like here in the UK or across the rest of the rest of Europe that were investigated. And that's why when you go and when you look at, you follow the link in the show notes and you see the link to the story on Autocar that we're using as reference, you'll notice that the list is different from the list that I gave a couple of episodes ago and what seems like many months ago, of vehicles that did have to have their CO2 ratings revised here in the EU This is a much wider list. And so yeah, it is slightly different. It's worth bearing in mind that this is for the US, not for the UK.
Yes.
So I mean, there we go. I mean, that's that. As I say, I don't think it's a huge surprise. I am absolutely not. I'm a much more of a student of the West Wing than I am of US law. So I imagine that there's all sorts of subpoenas and all sorts of fun stuff is happening now, and that's one of the reasons why this has been started. This, again, if this is sorted before the summer, I will be amazed.
Oh yeah, there's no chance.
I mean, this is.
They may have come up with remedies by then, but the legal action will rumble on and on and on, won't it?
Aye, yeah. This is at least a year.
Yeah. Okay, moving on then to one you spotted.
Moving on to one I spotted, and this one this time around I spotted it on Mashable, which is big, which was a Jaguar engineer, in fact, a Jaguar XF project manager, Stephen Balter, commenting that a mishap with Tesla's autopilot could set back self-driving cars by about a decade. And he's pointing out that really, you know, everyone's going on, everyone's, you know, Tesla making a big thing of this and how you need electric cars to do it. And he's actually pointing out that really all they need is electric power steering. That actually they have all of it, you know, some of the modern adaptive cruise control systems actually are just the same as the Tesla system that they're bigging up quite a lot. But, you know, people are worried about the safety of things. And that first crash, that first time there was something quite, you know, an unfortunate incident, because things are in autonomous mode or semi-autonomous mode, could well be a significant setback.
Well, the name they've given the system doesn't help them at the moment.
Tesla. Yes, autopilot. Yeah.
Which is why people, you know, as you've said when we previously discussed this, but the name then, because people are silly. Decided that meant, oh, I can get in the back of the car and it will drive me safely. It will be fine. Nothing can go wrong. They say, no, don't do that. Please don't do that. That's 2 tons of metal at speed.
Yeah. Well, quite. And that's it. It's, and we've got to go through this. We've got to go through people misusing it to sort of prove and improve the safety for the rest of us. But yeah, that people doing really stupid stuff.
Well, this reiterated what we discussed in our end of the year review, where we said the beta testing on the road is not with members of the public is not the way it can be done. And Jaguar, Balter seems to be saying the same thing. It's like, yes. No, that's not how it's done. This has to work before we let it out. Not, oh, well, it's pretty much there. Well, let's just see if there's any kinks to iron out.
And that's absolutely what Jaguar are doing, by the way.
Yes.
It's not that they're not looking at autonomous vehicles. They are. They say that they're going to test it. You know, the company will soon be testing self-driving cars on the roads in Gaydon in England. So there you go. Stay away from that part of Warwickshire if you don't want to, if you're quite worried about that kind of thing. But yeah, very much so. So it's just pointing out that the craziness of some of these people, rather than the craziness of Tesla itself, could actually be cause major issues for self-driving or at least semi-autonomous vehicles in the next little while. It is the next big thing, the next big big change I think we're going to start seeing in day-to-day driving. But yeah, quite how we get to it is still a little bit shaky. Of course, it would be great to get to that without any accidents. But Yeah. Yes. Yeah. I'm not sure that's going to happen.
Well, it mentions in that article how manufacturers want to go to full autonomous rather than semi-autonomous.
Mm.
Full autonomous seems to be something they can control better than semi, which it does sound quite plausible, because you're dealing with two sets of inputs, you know, what the car is doing and what others are doing outside the car. Whereas if it's semi-autonomous, you're dealing with what the car's doing, what the driver may do, and what outside are doing.
Yes, absolutely.
That adds a massive amount of complexity.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I can see why they're doing it. Yep.
Cool. So, next up was one that you'd found, and that's... It's not so much about the vehicles being autonomous, but the actual design of the vehicles.
Yes. Fisker...
Different.
...has filed a £68 million lawsuit against Aston Martin, because Aston Martin are allegedly trying to force Fisker out of the market by not allowing them to reveal their Force One, which in a sketch looks an awful lot like...
Is it worth mentioning that it is Henrik Fisker himself?
Yes, sorry.
The man behind Fisker Automotive, which isn't anymore, as opposed to Fisker, the company, because I believe it... When, by the time Fisker finally went down, Henrik Fisker wasn't involved anymore.
Mm.
Maybe.
Yeah, sorry, thanks for clarifying that.
That's all right.
This lawsuit's about, it's best to be correct.
Yes, well, quite. It's like, I don't know about you.
Although, good luck if they're going to try and get that sort of money out of me.
As we don't have a budget for anything else, we really don't have a budget for for defending ourselves.
Our share price really would take a nosedive, wouldn't it? Investors would get scared.
Our investors.
Yeah.
I've just renewed the URL for the next 2 years.
Yeah, I wonder how that goes from strange ways.
Yeah, it's quite.
Yeah. Anyway, back to the Aston Martin and Henrik Fisker issue. Aston Martin apparently feel that the new Force One is too close... a resemblance to the DB10.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they feel that if he did reveal the car, Aston would then have to come out and protect its intellectual from the car magazine article. It says protect its intellectual property rights on the grounds of design similarity.
But this isn't the first time the two have come to blows, though, isn't it? Well, almost come to blows, is it?
No. They it's Project Thunderbolt concept,
yeah,
which was based on a Vanquish, which apparently made it look very much like a Vanquish. So they said, "No, you can't do that," they withdrew. He withdrew the Thunderbolt and decided not to produce it. But. Whenever I see one of these things, it reminds me of, was it Lotus that tried to copyright the wedge shape few years ago?
Possibly, yes. This is all made so much more complicated by the fact that Henrik Fisker was a designer for Aston Martin, wasn't he?
He was the design director, and... He was responsible for the V8 Vantage and the DB9.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, so he seems
to have clearly got a style.
Yes. Yes, he does clearly have a style, and unfortunately he's not quite managed to shake that one off yet, which is... It's mostly a good-looking style, although, to be honest, I didn't like the Karma, which is, of course, the Fisker that everybody thinks of from Fisker Automotive.
Yes.
Which was kind of a bit weird and lumpy, but never mind.
Reminded me of a Caterham 21, actually, that did.
Yeah, I understand where you're coming from, but it didn't remind me of one, so... No. I'd rather have the Fisker 21, the Caterham 21 than the Fisker.
Mm.
I saw one once, you know. Not a Fisker, a Caterham 21.
Really?
Real double take. Yeah, it was on the Hammersmith Gyratory a few years ago. And it was a real sort of, what's that? That looks weird. That's a, okay. Oh, it's gone. I can't take a photo of it anymore. And that was before Twitter anyway, so. No way of sharing it with other nerds who would appreciate the fact that it was a Caterham 21 that I spotted.
Right, moving on from lawsuits.
Mm-hmm.
And one you found?
Yes, potential lawsuit. It was just a quick one. It was more autonomous vehicles, I'm afraid, as we do. It was just the chat that was kind of credited as being the first iPhone hacker, built himself his own self-driving Acura. So he's built himself a self-driving car, which is powered by Linux, Ubuntu, so commercially freely available Linux, install. And he's built his own self-driving Honda, basically. Six cameras, two rearview mirrors. Six cameras, two near the rearview mirror, two on the sides, one in the back, and one fisheye camera up top. And he's going to try and create a package which he could sell for about $1,000 to both automakers and consumers. I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing. But if you want to make up your mind for yourself, I'm sure that the link to this Slash Gear article, and there's an accompanying video in it. And you can make up your own mind on that, and just how it looks like it would work.
Yes.
It's a bit scary.
Looking. Yeah, I don't know enough technical details to know whether this is real or not. I mean, it comes across, you know, and then you watch the video and stuff. It looks legit and everything else, but.
Yeah, he's got a reputation for actually.
I mean, he's clearly very clever.
He's clearly very clever, but that scares the willies out of me. Is that what you're trying to say just then?
Yeah, because it's not really doing it regulated.
No,
he's done it in his own car, and he's on the highway.
At least there's no question of who's responsible.
Yes. Wonder if his insurers know that's what he's done.
Oh, it's the US. You probably don't have to be insured in that. What state's he in? Does it tell me?
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, it's interesting to see that, you know, a person has done this.
Yes.
When you've got all the companies, all the manufacturers desperately putting teams and teams and teams together to do this. So what does he know that the others don't?
Mm-hmm.
And that may be the one thing that he teaches.
Yeah.
That comes out of this, it's good. Uh-huh. That it doesn't, you know, that there may be a simpler way to do it. But let's see.
Cool. Well, it was just an interesting little sidey one in there. But you've got something which is, which speaks far more to our pockets than that, I think.
Yes, we have expressed once or twice on this show, or I have certainly, how it is obvious that car driver of this country is a cash cow for governments and councils. And apparently, we are in the top five. We are number four for the most taxed across Europe for our cars, or motoring taxes, full stop. So,
yes.
Ahead of us, beating us to being taxed more, is France, then Italy, and then Germany, which seems to me to be. All those four seem to be the largest car manufacturing countries in the EU as well. So,
yeah, which is, I'm sure, is a complete and total coincidence.
Yeah, quite.
It was curious, this, actually. It was curious, this one, because I would have reckoned that Sweden and Denmark would be much, much higher. But maybe the number of cars isn't as high as in the sort of top four countries. And maybe the additional sort of VAT and import duty isn't counted in it. Isn't counted in there, because I know that cars in Denmark and Sweden can get very, very expensive very, very quickly due to purchase taxes. So maybe that's not in there. But yeah, oh, okay. I'm just reading further down and reminding myself of stuff. And yeah, okay. Sweden's drivers contributed 9.6 billion euros in 2012 in motoring taxes, despite being a country of just 9.7 million people. There we go. There's the answer. There aren't as many folk.
Yeah.
So yeah. Yeah, so when you look at it per capita, it's only £710 per head, as opposed to the UK, £46.6 billion. But then that's divided across 63.7 million of us. So, yeah, £731 per head in motoring taxes.
Yeah, so just a bit more. But if you look down at the comment on the article that will be in the show notes, there is a different dissection of those numbers.
Yeah, which is actually breaking it down by that number.
Mm.
Which, yeah, we're significantly further down. That actually, now that I see those numbers, do make more sense. The Endless Waves commenter on Autocar has put in there.
Italy's still right up there.
I was coming on my way back up through France on Sunday. I was quite surprised to be overtaken by quite a high spec Range Rover with Italian plates on. Because Italy doesn't really have a luxury car market, I don't believe. Because if you spend more than a certain amount on a vehicle, you immediately get submitted for a tax inspection.
Yeah, I thought that there was swathes of abandoned Ferraris, Porsches and Lamborghinis across Italy, because if you had a nice car, the tax man knocked on your door and said, I'm going to look through your bank balance.
Yeah, I thought the other year, I think they only sold something like 6 Ferraris in Italy, something ridiculous. That could be rubbish. I could be recalling that wrongly, but I'm pretty much certain of that.
But anyway, with that article, it fed the... it confirmed my bias, which was that the government takes the mickey out of us drivers and charges us too much.
Mm-hmm.
Which may not really be that true, but still.
Jeez. Yeah, it's not too bad. Well, it's not too bad, he says, thinking of the ridiculous amounts I spend in taxis. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right, moving on, and this is more of a thought piece than actual news, which I was quite interested, which is why I decided that you weren't going to take this out of the show.
Yes, I did. I was, yes. Well, it's worth mentioning, really, that tonight, so we're recording this on the 5th, and this is the end of the first press day of CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas. And those of you who have been following the Twitters and the motoring journals today will have noticed that there's an awful lot of motoring hacks in Las Vegas at the minute, going out to cover the car side. Now, traditionally, Consumer Electronics Show was all about your new tellies. Okay, even when I first came across it and heard of it 4 or 5 years ago, it was all about what's new in TVs, what's new in hi-fi, washing machines, fridges, all these kind of things. Really genuine consumer electronics. It wasn't really about computers. It wasn't really about any of these things. It's not a public show. It was really for American equivalents of Comet and Dixon's and your family, your local, or your regional sort of home electricals, resellers to come along and find out what was happening in the marketplace and to look at the latest dishwashers and make their orders for the latest dishwashers and all that kind of thing. And that traditionally is what it's been. But in the last 2 or 3 years, there have been a lot of car companies starting to exhibit there, starting to unveil new, not just new ideas, but new models there. And so I'm kind of curious about where the line is between consumer electronics and cars, because we're all used to people, all our motoring journalists, dashing off to the US at the start of January. But traditionally, that was to cold, snowy Detroit for the Detroit Motor Show that's also on at the moment, although you may not have noticed it. So I was kind of curious, and this started me thinking about where the line actually was between consumer electronics and cars. And I don't have an answer.
Well, they're not. They are consumer electronics now.
They really. Well, that's it.
They're
that's
white kind goods. Of it.
That's
the vast majority of cars that are marketed and sold are white goods. It's only the very rare extreme performance stuff, or the very extreme off-road or anything like that. They are the only ones that are not consumer electronics. Your C sector segment, even not sector, your C segment car is aimed at someone who wants to get from A to B as simply as possible, as cheaply as possible, with the most amount of comfort and the most toys they can squeeze in for their budget. And that's how most cars are now. And that's, I mean, we know this as fans of cars. We know we're in a bit of a minority, and we know the vast majority of people only see them as a tool to get a job done.
Mm-hmm.
And most journeys for most people, even if you are a car fan, are not fun.
No.
It's the trudge into work in the morning. It's the go in the supermarket. You know, it's, you don't get, not every journey is great. Fantastic. I've got a windy road, but I've got to go and pick up a pint of milk. Brilliant. That's only going to take me 3 hours. I'll be back soon.
I never do. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That's it. It is the consumer electronification of vehicles.
Because what is being flogged more and more into or as part of the car is, oh, look, you can have your music streaming. Oh, look, you can do this. Oh, look, you know, your friends can follow you on Facebook and see where you are on the map, or they can do this or that or the other. And it's all aimed at your comfort and basically your phone and what you would do on your phone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we are now with it all. And reports are out there for connected cars and autonomous cars that say consumers expect XYZ.
Yeah. I've yet to meet anyone who expects to be able to hold a Skype conference call through via their car entertainment system, like one link that you put up on Twitter.
Yeah.
Ron, I read that and I thought, well, it's not as totally stupid as it sounds at first.
No, I mean, they did make it clear that the car
it had to be
will be in park before you can do that, which is, oh, well, that filled me with a little bit of confidence, because I was expecting it to be, as you're driving along, have a Skype chat. Because things like the touchscreens. I mean, I know that currently there's a lot of things going on about how there's haptic touchscreens now, so it will make it, you will be able to feel the difference, or you have the potential to feel the difference between different switches and knobs. But up to now, touchscreens are a flat screen that you have to look at to adjust something. That is not safer than having a knob that you twist to go, I'm moving the fan from off to on, because you have to look away from the road.
Mm-hmm.
Even if you're used to the touchscreen, you still have to look away because you don't know for sure that you're in the right bit.
Yeah.
But before I change my avatar to a tinfoil hat, we're not going to discuss CES tonight.
Really, the reason for this being in here is for us to say that a little bit, and then for also to say And that's why we're not covering CES stuff this evening. We want to be able to take it away, digest it a wee bit, and come back next week and talk about it.
Because there's more stuff tomorrow coming out as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah, we're in the middle. I mean, there's probably, because of the time differences, there's stuff being announced all the time. We were never going to be on top of it. It was just going to be a case of just jamming it in. So we're trying not to do that.
No, we'd like to comment on it remotely level-headed as opposed to my initial gut reaction, which is, no!
It's well, that's what evil. I was going to say. It's much, much better for Andrew's blood pressure if we just let him get on with it. Okay. I'll make sure he has chamomile tea or something before we start recording. It'll be fine. Just let's not do it tonight.
Ah, dear. Moving on, though.
Moving on. Should we talk about something slightly less contentious?
Yes.
Or at least less contentious for most of the world than...
We have commented previously, haven't we, about how Ferrari has been put on stock exchanges and things like that.
So yes.
There's New Jersey Ferrari and...
Mm-hmm. New Jersey Ferrari.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that's just alienated all the listeners in New Jersey. It's good. I mean, we've got to do it every show. Well, you have to seem to do it every show.
I'm very careful about where I pick them up from.
Yeah.
Well, we don't have that many listeners in Glossop, so last time I figured I could go for Glossop. New Jersey, not that many in New Jersey. I think New Hampshire, we send some of that area we start to get into. Didn't have any listeners again, but yeah.
But anyway, Fiat has officially now split with Ferrari.
Yes.
So they've got Fiat Chrysler has handed over their 80% stake. And there's apparently some special deal which will prevent hostile takeovers as well.
Yes.
So
yeah, between
that's done, and that seems to me to be quite a cash rich seems to be quite an income that Fiat are getting rid of.
Yeah, I'm just looking here to see if
I'm still not sure why. I mean, apart from short-term cash, why they're doing it? Unless they need the short-term cash.
Yeah, I don't really get it.
Yeah, because I don't play shares and I'm not a director of accounts, so I don't know why the numbers are being moved around on spreadsheets and things. So.
Essentially, though, it is still controlled by the same people as before. And it is the Agnelli family that founded Fiat, still has 24% of the stock. And Piero Ferrari, son of Enzo, still holds 10%. But because of the way that it seems to have all been structured, they still have just under 49% of voting rights. And the Agnellis and the Ferrari family, as I say, have signed an agreement designed to prevent hostile takeovers by agreeing to offer each other first refusal of any stock they want to sell. So that's still only an agreement between shareholders, though. It could be broken, and these kind of things have happened before. So we'll see what happens.
Yep.
But yeah.
So it's all done now.
It's all done. All done. It just seems strange. Anyway,
awful lot of air fresheners got to be sold now.
Yes, and baseball caps and stuff.
Yes, quite. Right, moving on to another one you spotted.
Speaking of investments, this was an interesting one, and I didn't really get the. I heard about it and then didn't really get the significance straight away. But
ding.
But oh, sod. As I said, right, I predicted 8:30 I'd start yawning, so I've made it till 9:08, so that's not bad. Yeah, I didn't get the significance of this to begin with. And I figured it was a bit weird. But basically, General Motors said it's going to invest $500 million in the ride-sharing company called Lyft. Now, you possibly, if you've not heard of Lyft, you've probably heard of Uber. Okay, Uber in theory is a ride-sharing company. Uber tries to tell you it's a ride-sharing company, but really it's a taxi company. And Lyft is a little bit more ride-sharing, but not that much. And Lyft cars tend to have big pink moustaches mounted on the front of them, which is why you don't see that many of them around the place. And in the UK, I believe they only operate in London. But there's the background. But what GM is trying to do is it and Lyft are going to try and work together to develop driverless cars for GM, basically. So GM has... I'm so sorry.
Ding.
That's terrible. Pardon me. So GM have done lots of work on driverless cars. Lyft has software that matches drivers, passengers, calculates routes, all that kind of thing, just as you'd expect. And the idea is for them to work together so that GM can do the car part of it. And funnily enough, the tech startup lends its expertise in algorithms and all that kind of stuff to actually work out the routes and the matching of vehicle to potential passenger, and you know how many you're going to need at a certain time of the day or night and all that kind of stuff. So this is really, really interesting because Uber is thought to be working on driverless cars. This is a really, really overt, clear sign that GM is. And, you know, they're trying to work out if, try and move towards a sort of autonomous taxi type setup.
Well, that's it. I mean, that'll absolutely crucify the taxis because they'll then be Uber and Lyft and whoever can bring autonomous cars as taxis first can then drop the price so dramatically.
Yeah. Well, that's their big.
Because they're already cheaper, aren't they?
Mostly, yes. It depends what. From an Uber point of view, it depends which Uber you get. So if you get sort of minicab Uber, which is an Uber X. Is that right? Yeah, Uber X, I think. Let me check.
It's dependent on... If I'm correct with this, because I've never used Uber, but it depends on the time of day as well, doesn't it, and demand?
A little bit, yeah. So in the UK, in London, and I'm just booting up the Uber app on my phone to make sure this is correct, there's like four different levels you can get here in London. Here in London. Here in the UK, specifically in London. I'm not in London. So there's an Uber X, which is a kind of, which is basically a minicab type setup. So that's probably going to be a Prius or something like that, or maybe a 3 Series. There's Uber XL, which is normally a people carrier. There's Uber Exec, which is going to be an E-Class Merc or similar. And there's Uber Lux, which is going to be an S-Class Merc or similar, probably a 7 Series. So those are kind of four levels. So the Uber X is cheaper than a normal taxi. The XL, the XEC, and the Lux are normally more expensive. Now, there's a kind of standard rate on Uber, and I'm just trying to check if I can find it here, but I don't think I can. No, I would find out if I actually summoned a car, and it's declaring that here in Corby there are none available, funnily enough. So there's a kind of standard rate, and the standard rate is for X is normally cheaper than a taxi.
Okay.
Than a hackney carriage. But then sometimes if there's high demand, so on like Friday evening, or one that was in the news other times, it was New Year's Eve, loads and loads of demand. So what they do is they hike the prices. So there's still availability. It's just more expensive to do that. So if you want to pay a lower price, you basically got to go out, stand and try and hail a cab if you want. That's your choice between the two. I've forgotten where this was going.
I was just seeking clarification that it was cheaper, but because if they go autonomous, they remove the need to pay someone to drive it, which is a major factor in any price. Mm-hmm. And then it's just a pure paying the lease of the car, paying for the fuel, the tax, the insurance, and the running costs.
Well, if it's autonomous, then the fuel should be cheaper too. But because if you were doing it that way, then you would have it electric with with induction charging.
Yeah.
I might, sorry if I'm coming straight into that one, but many, many moons ago, I did a university project when I was still a design student, and I had a proper job, when I was still studying to have a proper job. And I designed a system of autonomous taxis, electric taxis, which you could almost do now. You can't quite, but you could almost do it now. I don't think they'd be allowed for reasons of safety and exposed wheels and stuff. But yeah, it's almost at the stage where that third year project of mine could be made, which is kind of cool. So yeah, that's one of the reasons I'm always interested in these stories. I've gone way off topic, I'm sorry.
No, that's fine.
But I thought it was interesting, basically, that a proper car company, in fact, one of the biggest, is actually investing in a startup, a lift sharing startup like that. And that may well see, again, it's another thing moving towards autonomous vehicles. Now, I think they've almost nailed electric, but, you know, they're at the stage of refining the infrastructure and refining the battery tech in the same way as we've been doing with cars the last 100, with internal combustion engines for the last 100-odd years. Then I think that this is going to be the next step forward. Certainly for day-to-day driving and day-to-day traveling.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see the sense of a lift sharing thing in, say, London.
Yes. Well, even more so somewhere like Los Angeles, where the public transport is really dodgy, and the city is very, very spread out. London, to be honest, the tube and everything's so good that it's still not. We're still not as great a market as many of the American cities.
Mm. Okay.
So, finish off quickly. There was one other that I noticed, and this is one other story that I noticed just around Christmas time, and I'm sure that everybody else who's listening did too. And that was the rumor of new Top Gear hosts, both Sabine Schmidt, the German racing driver, and lovely smiley person, and also motoring journalist Chris Harris would be part of the new Top Gear team. Which I thought was interesting. I don't know how true it is. I mean, it was the Sun that reported this. It's worth noting that the Sun's top line motoring correspondent is one Jay Clarkson Esquire. but yeah, it was weird. And the reason that it caught my eye, and I could believe to an extent, I could believe either of them might be in place for that. But it just seemed weird that the Sun seemed adamant that it was both Sabine Schmidt and Chris Harris, because it didn't really make sense to me to have two permanent helmsmiths like them, super handy people, on the show. You would normally expect there to be maybe one, like in US Top Gear, rather than necessarily being two. So yeah. Any thoughts, Andrew?
Yeah, well, I've got no problems with either of those being on, though. I mean, it's clearly going to be a different format to the show.
Yeah.
Particularly if there's supposed to be four. that changes the dynamics immediately. And they're all, you know, Chris Evans is in this. He's the least drivery of the lot.
Yeah, well, David Coulthard, by the way, is the fourth that we didn't mention. But it does, yeah. It should, which might be interesting. It may just be that they're on as presenters presenting one or two spots over the course of the series, of course.
Yeah, I mean, I'd hope they, and I presume they are, not going to try and just replicate Clarkson, Hammond and May.
Mm.
Because so much of it, as so many people have said, but the magic of that show, a lot of that was the chemistry between the three.
Mm-hmm.
And them getting themselves into silly situations and then us just enjoying the entertainment from the back of that.
Yeah.
There's going to be so much speculation, and I hate doing speculation.
Yeah.
But I can't wait for the show to come out because it's going to be another motoring show on telly. You know, we said in the last show how, because of Top Gear going away, it's been great because we've been able to explore YouTube. But equally, I'd like some motoring telly to see. You know, we've had Fifth Gear, but that's been moved to satellite satellite channels, which is a shame that it's not on terrestrial telly until much further.
It was a little bit highbrow for Channel 5.
Yeah. And hopefully they're going to do another series of that. The one, what was it? Is it Classic Cars that had Quentin and
yes,
Judy
that
Kidd?
Actually starts very, very soon.
I'm not sure that's not repeat the series.
I didn't see the first series. I don't.
Oh, okay. Well, watch it then. Watch, if it comes on and you haven't seen it, go and watch it. It was very good. So yeah. So I'll just be delighted because I like I say, I presume they're going to do something different.
Yeah.
So it's going to be fun to see what that is. And let's be realistic. Half of Twitter is going to be angry. Half of Twitter is going to be fine with it. Mm-hmm. And it will be ever thus. You know, and when Clarkson, Hammond and May come out on Amazon and people watch that, it's going to be exactly the same thing. Mm-hmm. There's going to be people saying it's the same old rubbish and there's going to be people going, this is brilliant, thank God it's back. So,
yeah.
I will just, when these shows are on, I will just not watch Twitter any time around it because it's just, well, it is what it is. And either you enjoy it or you don't. If you don't watch it. Simple as that.
Yeah, vote with the remote.
Yeah, exactly. Nice cliche saying there. Well done.
Well, we'd be missing out. We hadn't had that many of them this time.
He may be nighttime, but you still can't take the consultant out of him.
Ooh, that hurts.
No, it doesn't.
No, it doesn't really. Anyway, I think that's just about everything for this week, isn't it?
I think so.
Cool. Nothing I've missed in an embarrassing and confusing fashion? No. Nope, don't think so. As usual, Andrew. Outside of this, how can everyone get in touch with you?
Your best way is via Twitter, where I am at Crack Windscreen. And how about you, Alan?
Well, similarly, Twitter for me, at AJP Bradley. If you want to get in touch with the show, then the absolute best way is via the website at www.motoringpodcast.com. Next best is by Twitter, which is at Motoring Podcast. And lastly, we actually have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/motoringpodcast, or give it a little search for it, and Facebook may or may not actually let you see it, because they're Facebook and they're like that. Yes, we'll talk about that one privately, Andrew. The show. Show, of course, available on the website. It's also available on iTunes, Downcast, Overcast, just about every app with the word cast in its name. If there's any podcatchers that you use, and you can't get Motoring Podcast, then let me know and I'll try and sort that out for you. Is that it? Oh, no. I know what it was. There's always something I forget. And last of all, on any of those, feel free to give us a rating. Please, a review is even better, and telling your mates is even better than any of those. So, yes, thank you very much for listening. Is that about it, Andrew?
It is.
Cool.
See, we're out of practice.
We are. I feel really out of practice tonight, actually. Anyway, until next time, I've been Alan Bradley.
And I've been Andrew Clues.
And safe motoring.